Kira Noble.
Students are returning to both school and college. Many people already back to school, some back to college. The spun out contributors are demanding their right to high quality sex education. This is inspired by the new Junior Cert or SE curriculum. Spun out has launched a new campaign. It's called Under the Sheets. And I'm joined now by Spun out's director, Kiki Martyr. How are you today?
I'm great.
I am very well, thank you so much. So first, just let people know what Spun Out as an organisation is and does.
Yes, spunout.ie is Ireland's youth information website for young people 16 through 25, although of course any age can go on the site. And we share holistic health information, anything from your mental health, sexual health, relationships, so that it's kind of a safe space for young people to go and just find information that's reliable and trustworthy and factual on the internet, as well as unbiased and free from any judgment. And we also share young people's lived experiences. So young people write content, make TikToks, videos, and share what life is like for them and share specific experiences, especially around their health and challenges they've had, so that other young people can feel less alone.
So this Under the Sheets campaign, it aims to debunk sexual health myths and to concentrate on all aspects of sexual health, not just the biological, which kind of would have been in the history of the Irish curriculum. And it's created by Spun Out volunteers, which is the most interesting part, I think, who are, of course, between that same age group that Spun Out does target, the 16 to 25 year olds. And it's online articles it's made up of, written by people describing their own experiences with sex education and sexual health issues that they have faced. What exactly is different in this new Junior Cert or SE program?
Yeah, you're exactly right. Spun Out runs information campaigns, all year long every year, but this one is special in that once a year, our action panel members and our kind of volunteer contributors vote and decide which topic is most important to them, and they create this whole campaign top to bottom themselves and write all the content and lead it completely. So it's very special. And this year, with the new Junior Cert curriculum kind of being consulted on right now, actually, you can go and still submit on the NCCA's website until I think it's October 18th. That this was kind of the topic that was most important to them to kind of talk about what sex ed was really like for them growing up in Ireland and the things that they're really excited and hopeful for with the new curriculum, such as more LGBTI inclusive education, talk about porn, talk about self-esteem and body image and consent, and sort of all the things the other education was lacking, but also just talk about what they still missed out on. You know, even though this consultation is currently happening and they're excited for young people coming up to receive better and more, what they still missed out on, what they think other young people should know right now, and what kind of new programs are coming out still at the moment around free contraception, free condoms, free at-home STI checks, and everything that is kind of circling around these issues at the moment.
And Kiki, going by your accent, it's American there, obviously. From what you've learned, about the Irish health system here, how does it compare to the United States? Are we behind?
Oh, it's really hard to compare the two. Obviously, Spun Out focuses entirely on the Irish context, and it's a kind of unique and specialized resource for young people, regionally there. The U.S. is so large and has so many unique needs in every state and law and, commonalities for sex ed state to state are so different that it's really hard to draw a parallel from kind of the Irish context to theirs.
Okay. If we look at some of the authors, what they've said about the lack of sex education, they call it, and how it impacted their sexual health, what was the general overall view on that?
Sort of just how they felt alone and how they had to go searching for all the answers themselves and do their own research. And, it can be just really isolating and scary when you're kind of going off of your own back or trying to talk to your friends about it and they might not have the right information. So they're really proud that they're able to kind of give factual unbiased information on our site, and we're really proud of that as well. But sort of just that, sex wasn't talked about in a real way. They were seeing it maybe with porn or in movies or in media. But then when they had it, they were like, oh, I need to actually have these awkward conversations with my partner, or I need to fiddle with the condom beforehand, or my body makes weird noises, and just sort of these normal things, normal everyday things that everyone kind of experiences if they're sexually active, but aren't normalized and are seen as strange when actually everyone's kind of experiencing them in silence. So to me, it's a really exciting campaign because it's young people saying, hey, we're not going to bring the stigma or the silence or the shame that we kind of were passed down from past generations. We want to have these open conversations, talk about these things freely with amongst ourselves and also with younger people who are, you know, in their mid-teens and just thinking about these things for the first time, and say, hey, this is how you think, get information for yourself on contraception. This is how important getting STI checks are, you know, as soon as you're sexually active. This is how you can kind of talk to your partners about whose responsibility is the contraception or the test. And obviously a huge part of this was also just how having LGBTQ plus, you know, inclusive sex education, not just as like a separate siloed afterthought within sex ed, but having that be embedded and like, you know, woven throughout all the sex ed is so important for young people. And that was something that the volunteers really highlighted as well.
Yeah, just going through some of the topics brought up in the campaign, how I communicate with a partner about contraception, as Kiki noted, very important, something that probably wasn't done in years gone by, how I find the right contraception for me. One person noting, it's really not that outrageous for me to say that I learned much more about sexual health through personal experience and research than I ever did from school. I think a lot of people would back that up in this country. Then things like who's responsible for making sure that contraception is used, as Kiki pointed out. One of the authors said, it can be difficult having these discussions, but it's also really important to do so. What I wish I knew before I started taking the pill. Marie here says, people on social media talking about how coming off the pill did wonders for them, how all these hormones are just bad for you, etc. And all I have to say to that is, take it with a pinch of salt, obviously protecting people from pregnancy if that is not their aim. Then STI tests, why people go for them regularly, even if they're symptom free. Here, Lisa says that she found getting an STI test easier than expected. She feels more education is needed to reduce that stigma. Her quote, in my experience, there was no judgment from the medical professionals whatsoever. What you can expect when you're taking an at-home STI self-test. Deandra said, I had always assumed that it would have to be done in a hospital or a clinic and that it might cost me an arm and a leg to get it done, but the service is available to anyone over 17 in most counties in this country. And one of the most important things you touched on there, Kiki, LGBTI plus inclusive sex education. Ilan says it's for the safety of the young LGBTI plus people who are already in the midst of a vulnerable period in their lives. Showcasing healthy non-heterosexual relationships in terms of consent and communication will equip young people with boundaries and the confidence needed to enforce them. And the final one here, Kiki, I don't know what you'd take on this. How I learned to stop taking sex so seriously.
Yeah, this is actually one of my, not to pick favorites, it's one of my favorite pieces of, you know, just a top to bottom fantastic campaign that these contributors brought together. But, you know, there was just so much pressure. This one particular volunteer, and I think a lot of people can really relate to this, so much pressure and importance placed on sex, placed on, you know, first or early sexual experiences, and that it was, you know, so intense and so much pressure leading up to it. And this person found that actually sex was kind of a bit silly, a bit goofy, you know, can be fun, can be playful, you know, that there were moments of it where maybe, you know, your body's made a weird noise or you started giggling, and, you know, how it just doesn't have to be so intense all the time or so the way that movies make it seem or that you see other portrayals in media so serious. He found his kind of more regular everyday sexual experiences growing up to be just very different than how they were portrayed. And I think that's a really human, very kind of common experience that people have. So I really love that piece. And I really encourage everyone to kind of take a look. And it's very kind of focused on like compassion for yourself as you're figuring out, you know, your own sexual identity, your own sexual health, and just not, you know, just, yeah, not taking it so seriously. I mean, take it seriously in terms of your health and getting STI checks and talking openly about it, but not it having to seem so heavy and negative and dire and filled with kind of all this pressure and stigma.
Well, Kiki Martyr there, the director of Spun Out, speaking about that new campaign Under the Sheets. It's also in the campaign including video pieces featuring young people discussing their own experiences of the sex education they received in school here in Ireland. If people want more information, of course, it's all available on spunout.ie/voices/Under the Sheets. Very easy to find when you do click on to the spunout.ie homepage. Now, the health of 35 children between the ages of 6 and 11 is being seriously compromised after they were refused what is being called a life-changing cystic fibrosis drug. It's Kaftrio, I believe is how you pronounce it. It's being provided to 140 children currently in Ireland, but a pricing disagreement has arisen between the HSE and Vertex Pharmaceuticals. This is over another 35 children with a particular genotype which have yet to gain access to it. Now, between 1 and 2 o'clock this afternoon, there was a protest held outside Leinster House demanding the HSE and the pharmaceutical company reach an agreement by both parents and children affected by cystic fibrosis. And Gráinne E. Luing is one of those parents. She is based in Maynooth. She has two daughters with cystic fibrosis. She joins me now. Hi, Gráinne.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me here.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. Obviously, I'm sure a stressful day, you know, fighting for what you'd say is the health of your two lovely daughters. Tell me more about your two children and what ages they were diagnosed with cystic fibrosis at.
I have two girls. Cuiva is 8 and Fi is 6. And Cuiva was diagnosed through the HEALPERC test when she was 6 weeks old. We found out that she had cystic fibrosis. And Fia, although we knew ourselves when she was born, she was 10 days old when we got the official diagnosis. So we've had 8 years of it and double everything in our house with the two girls.
Now, can I ask, are they the only two children you have?
Yeah, only had the two, yeah.
Okay, so 6 and 8. Obviously heartbreaking to see any child go through any sort of health problems, but we all know a lot about cystic fibrosis in this country because Ireland does have quite a high number, I believe. Isn't that right, Gráinne, of people living with it here?
Yeah, Ireland has the highest number of it. It's very common in Ireland, although it is still very much a rare disease. The girls are generally well. When you look at the broad spectrum of CF, and the outlook for CF is much better than what it was, they will say, now that they live into their 40s. But with this drug, this wonder drug, Kaftrio, we're talking about living a normal life as a normal person for longer than that. So the age used to be within the teens or the 20s, the kids would live with CF. Now we're up in the 30s or 40s, but with Kaftrio, this completely changes it. And although the girls are generally well, Fia, my six-year-old, wasn't great for a year and a half. She had a really bad cough that we just couldn't move. We tried everything, different antibiotics, different medication. She was in and out of hospital for checkups and swabs and bloods and everything. We couldn't shift this cough for her. So our answer was Kaftrio, and we did all the pre-testing for Kaftrio, which we were to receive in May. And we found out in May that, no, actually, your genotype isn't included.
So, for no reason. Just describe that a little bit more to us. Explain why different genotypes. Well, firstly, what is a genotype?
So most people with CF have two of the same gene. It's the Delta 508. So that's the common gene. And then a smaller number would have two different mutations. So it's a Delta 508 and another, getting very technical here. But the girls have a rare gene. So there's probably only 11 or 12 cases in the world with the same gene as my two girls.
And then why cannot they not get the drug?
They can get the drug.
But why, in Ireland?
They can get the drug. Why they have been refused the drug, we don't know. So it seems that there has been an omission within the contract because the over 12s, their gene is included in the over 12s. So if Cuiva turned 12 tomorrow, she can have the drug. It's nothing to do with her genotype. It seems that they were just excluded from the contract 5 years ago.
Gráinne, can I just ask you, with her now being 8, right, would say if it was the case that no, Cuiva could not get the drug until she's 12, just what impact would that have?
This, like, CF is a deteriorating illness. You don't get better. You get worse with CF. And the drug Kaftrio takes you from your baseline. It starts you from there. It doesn't get you any better. So every day we wait, my girls are deteriorating. They're not getting better. So who's going to be responsible if the 35 become 34? Who's going to be responsible if the lung deterioration in one of my girls is so bad that they end up hospitalised, or they need a transplant, a kidney transplant, a liver transplant, a lung transplant? Who's responsible for that? And with this drug, that changes everything for us. So I can't imagine waiting 4 years until Caoimhe gets Cabtreo. I can't imagine waiting 6 years until Fia gets Cabtreo. The damage has been done daily in their internal organs.
And this protest that took place today, it boils down to what? A disagreement with the HSE and the Vertex Pharmaceutical Company. Why is there a disagreement there?
There seems to be a standoff. The contract that was signed 5 years ago seems to have left out these rare genotypes. And the HSE are saying, well, you know, we're not going to pay more. And Vertex are saying, well, you have to pay more because you've left them out.
Now, why are the HSE saying they're not going to pay more? Have you gotten an answer to that or an understanding as to why they're saying that?
No answer, no understanding. They want to set it for a health technology assessment, which is ridiculous because
how long
every
would that
other
take?
Person, that will take minimum 90 days. And they can stop that throughout those 90 days. But it brings them right back to where they are now with the pricing discussion. The HTA is just prolonging nothing, is what it's doing. So we need to intervene before it gets to a HTA. And we need this drug for the kids yesterday. They are deteriorating daily as we wait for the HSE and Vertex to come to an agreement. And how do you put a price on a child's life? How long do we have to wait? How much damage needs to be done before they say, OK, we'll give it to them?
And you know what, Grainne? I'm just reading an interview you've previously given, and I'm genuinely irritated and frustrated. And really, like, with me sitting in this chair, I probably shouldn't be saying that. But you noted that you walk into your local pharmacy, probably in this county, and you can actually see Cabtreo on the shelf, but you can't have it. And you noted it as torture, absolute torture.
I have to go into my local pharmacy and I come out with two bags of medication for my kids, between digestive medication, nebulars, inhalers, machines, saline. And I see behind that counter there's a box with Cabtreo, and I should be coming out with that and not two bags full of medication for my girls. And double that, it's four bags because of the two girls. I need that box behind the counter, that's all I should be coming out with. And to be denied that and to be able to see it there and I can't have it and I can't touch it. And that other mother has been in touch with me and she wishes she could give it to me, but we can't. For some reason, there's just a block in the system that says, no, your two girls can't have Cabtreo, but this other boy with CF can have Cabtreo. Across the board, these kids have cystic fibrosis. That's what we're asking. That's what we're fighting about. We cannot understand why 35 children have been excluded from this deal.
I have to say, I'm so sorry. I can just hear your, you know, emotions about this. And I could only imagine the frustration you feel. Just reading that line really got to me there. I was like, oh my goodness, you know, where is the sense? And with the protest that took place today, Grainne, did it give you, I suppose protests happen and are in action across the world because people do feel like they can cling on to some hope there. And did it give you some hope protesting in the last hour?
So we protested 5 years ago in the same spot for life for people with cystic fibrosis. And to have to do it today was just absolutely devastating. I had to get up and give a speech, and it's really hard to speak for these 34 families and just the upset and devastation that we're feeling. Now, we found out today that Vertex and the HSE are meeting on Friday. We think that's the first time since the whole summer. And in the meantime, over the summer, my youngest has been hospitalised with cystic fibrosis complications. So they're finally meeting on Friday. And what we wanted all along, for the last 4 months, we've been pleading for a meeting with Mr. Minister Stephen Donnelly, that he would meet with us and discuss this with us and intervene and just help us. And we found out today that we will have a meeting with Minister Donnelly. We don't know when, but we're going to follow up on it because
absolutely,
he needs to intervene. And we need answers, and we need this drug for our kids.
Grainne, can I ask you about your two girls? Caoimhe, she's the oldest, isn't she, at 8?
Yeah.
And right, then you've got Fia, which I absolutely love that name, at six. How are they doing? Like, do they have any concept, you know, at those ages of what's going on and what's happening? And I guess the seriousness of the situation.
Luckily enough, they don't. We did all the pre-testing for CAF Trio, so they've had blood done. They've had lung function tests. They've been in and out of hospital for swabs. And we had done all the pre-testing, and you know, they don't understand what they're doing. The kids are used to people just poking and prodding at them. It's not right. It's not right for a life with CF at all for the kids. So today, they're getting their pictures taken. They're getting interviews done. They're sick of being on the newspapers and the radio and the telly. I'm a little famous too. Luckily, I'm in a position where they don't really understand it. But then there are kids 10 and 11 years of age who knew that this magic drug was coming for them, and that they were told, actually, you're not going to get it. And those kids knew that a whole new life was just on them. And to be told, no, actually, you can't have it, but 140 other kids around your same age got this drug. That's absolutely devastating for the family to have to try and explain to that child, no, you didn't get it. And why you didn't get it, we don't know why you didn't get it.
Look, I should also ask how you are. I'm sure the answer is frustrated, tired. You know, you're mentioning 5 years ago you did the exact same thing when one of your children were one and Quiva would have been three, yeah. Fia at one. So I can only imagine how tired you feel, and obviously 2.5 years of a pandemic dealing with two children with cystic fibrosis, trying to avoid that virus has been very, very difficult on you. I am guessing all these things, but how are you?
I'm worn out. While everybody else had a summer holiday, I was emailing TDs, I was doing interviews, I was just trying to keep it in the media in the hope that somebody would see it and somebody could help us. But, you know, who talks to these huge big companies? Who deals with Vertex? We've no contact in Vertex.
Ooh, Grania, are you there?
No.
Yes, sorry, you broke up. You've no contact in Vertex, you said there.
We've no contact in Vertex. We've no contact in the HSE. We think that they haven't met for the whole summer. And for the whole summer, I've just been trying to keep my kids well. So I'm absolutely worn out. We need a resolution to this.
Well, I'm really so sorry that, you know, you've such stress on your plate. I have to say, I'm looking at photos of your two daughters. They're really gorgeous, Fia and Quiva. They really are. They're so cute. And they've got beautiful hair. And I see a lovely one of the three of you together all donning the shades. Obviously, it was a sunny day. But, you know, the pressure on parents like yourself, Grania Ealing, trying to get meetings with the health minister, which you say that's been confirmed, but a date as of yet not confirmed. Stephen Donnelly has been told to intervene to ensure 35 children are provided with this life-changing cystic fibrosis drug, CAF Trio. They were refused the treatment. This is following a disagreement between the HSE and the manufacturers, Vertex Pharmaceuticals. And as Grania pointed out, the understanding is to do with money and the price of getting this drug. It's being provided currently, CAF Trio, to 140 children in Ireland. Parents like Grania, guardians, etc., are looking at this drug on the shelves but cannot get it because their children are not entitled to it at the moment due to their genotype. Obviously very technical there. And parents and children protested outside Leinster House today. As Grania pointed out, they protested in the very same spot 5 years ago. And the chief executive of Cystic Fibrosis Ireland, Philip Watts, says they are considering taking legal action. Grania, I hope to speak with you within the next couple of weeks, that, you know, a meeting has been organised, a date has been set with that meeting with Minister Stephen Donnelly, and that you get good news. I wish you only the very, very best. You really are such an amazing mother, what you're doing for your children, fighting for them, and do take care of yourself. Thank you for joining me this afternoon. That is Grania Ealing, based in Maynooth. Both of her children, Fia, 6 years old, and Quiva, 8 year old, living with CF. Thanks, Grania.
Kildare Focus with Ciara Noble.
Speaking a few moments ago to Grania Ealing, a mother based in Maynooth with both her children, two daughters, Quiva and Fia, aged 8 and 6, living with cystic fibrosis, about the protest that took place just about a 2 hours ago nearly, it began between 1 and 2 this afternoon at Leinster House over the restricted access to Kaftrio, which has been hailed as a wonder drug for so many people. Now, currently in Ireland, 140 children are getting access to that drug, but some children, 35, including Grainne's 2 children, are not because of their genotype. And, you know, that's very technical and I don't fully understand that, obviously, but something that is very basic and really shouldn't be stopping those children from receiving the drug. Now, Grainne did note that she will meet, along with other parents and guardians, children, etc., with the Minister for Health. That date, though, has not yet been confirmed. They've been told they will have a meeting, but when that will be happening, we will have to follow up on that. And Mick in Meath has been in touch this afternoon. Hello to you, Mick. He says, the government and the HSE, a pure disgrace. How dare they play God with children's lives and bless that poor woman. Only a mother can and will fight for their children in a way that the stuffed shirts in government and the HSE will never understand. Thanks for getting in touch this afternoon, Mick. And obviously a very moving story there from Grainne. Now, I just want to remind people in the next few minutes, I will be giving the winners a shout there of the 2 pairs of tickets to next Wednesday's Ploughing Championship Festival, the 21st of September. If you can go next Wednesday, do enter in. It's happening in Rathanesca, but where is Rathanesca? What county? That's what I want you to let me know this afternoon. You can text 0833 97 97 97, your name, where you're based, and the answer to that question.
Okay, the National Women's Council of Ireland today launched a toolkit. This is for local authorities, including Kildare County Council, on how to encourage women into local government and support them to stay. They're basically calling for family-friendly policies to encourage more women into local government. I'm joined now by the director of the council, that is Orla O'Connor. You're very welcome.
Thank you.
So this toolkit was launched by the Minister of State for Planning and Local Government, Peter Burke, that is. If you are to sum up the toolkit in a few words, just to let us all know about it at first, what would you say?
Well, what the toolkit is for is to create a family-friendly and inclusive local government. It's coming from a context where women are very poorly represented on local government across Ireland. And really what this toolkit is going to do is to try to support local authorities to change their structures so that they can have a greater representation of women. And really what's in this will benefit both men and women in terms of creating that family-friendly environment.
You have said that we need more women involved in the decisions that shape all of our lives, as we know government does do. But in 2022, women, no matter what, in fairness, no matter what career they're in, a lot of them are forced to choose between a career and family commitments.
That's correct. And that's why there is that low level of representation. And, you know, I mean, there are some county councils that, you know, we might be talking about 2 and 3 members. And that's very low in terms of decision making. And absolutely, caring responsibilities is a key issue in terms of it being a barrier for women's representation and women's participation. And because it is women who are mainly doing the caring work in Ireland, that's why it's disproportionately affecting them in comparison to men. And that's why the structures need to change and why they need to be more family friendly. And that's, you know, in our toolkit, we're looking at a range of issues. And I think it's important to say these have come from councillors, from women councillors, who, you know, from their experience of the things that need to change. So, and I think as well what's important is there's also been a new experience from the pandemic that has shown that change is possible and changing structures quickly is possible to do. And an obvious example of that, for example, is being able to have remote meetings and not requiring people to be there every evening at those meetings. So remote working is one way of enabling participation, and particularly because local authorities have so many of their meetings in the evening.
It also means, though, you know, men can take up some of the slack, because if we're just speaking about on a gender-based thing here, because they too, their lives and their work lives have changed due to the pandemic, of course. But sticking to examples of groups that are, I guess, most
affected by this, they're already from disadvantaged groups, those women who are affected the most. Traveller women, they're more likely to shoulder caring responsibilities. Migrant women, they may not have any access to family support networks or can afford. And then lone parents may not have the support of a partner. And again, finances.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think the things that you have listed really show that, and while there's a low representation of women across the board for women and men, we have a low representation of the groups that you've, you know, that you've mentioned in terms of traveller women, in terms of lone parents. And absolutely, we've said about the care issues. Also, the issues of money is very significant. I mean, for, you know, for local authorities, we are talking about, you know, being partly paid. But in terms of even standing for local government, you need to have finance behind you, and that's really difficult if you're already disadvantaged, if you're already living on low incomes. So even standing for local government is difficult. And then in terms of participation, it also involves, because there's so much work that is involved around meetings, that it requires sufficient time to do that. And that, you know, that means then time that isn't spent, for example, in work. So if you're in, you know, a low-paid part-time job, as so many lone parents are, that's a real issue in terms of standing and participating in local government.
Now, women, they're continuing to be underrepresented in local government. They currently hold 25% of council seats. Here in County Kildare, we do actually have a higher number of women, especially in terms of our local councillor. It's still not equal, but we do have quite a high number.
That's correct. Kildare is actually, you know, when you look across the counties, Kildare is at 41%, which is actually the highest. There's 17 female councillors from the 2019 local elections. And that would be, I think the second highest across the country. And the average is 24%. And we have some areas, for example, Longford will be at 6%, or Waterford 6%. So there's a huge variation in that.
And Orla, is there any research done into why there is such a variation depending on geographical location?
No, there isn't research that really looks at, well, why is one county higher than another county? But what we know are, you know, we know the factors that make a difference in terms of women's participation. So there are factors like, and particularly in terms of standing for election, the supports that the political parties put in place, supports like, for example, financial supports. It's also about parties in, and particularly in terms of local government, going to networks within the area. So what we found from previous research, political parties, particularly the big parties, go, for example, to sporting networks, to the GAA, for example, to look at leaders and to encourage people to stand for election. Whereas maybe community organisations where women are more likely to be, they're less likely to look to for their political representatives. So there's a number of issues in terms of candidate selection that is affected and that makes a difference in terms of the representation of women. Yes, there is the piece, absolutely, about money. And then there's about the support within the party. So the parties themselves need to look at their structures in terms of how are they supporting women, how are they family friendly. And many of the things that we're suggesting for local authorities are relevant as well for the structures within political parties. For example, things like meeting times, which again, it tends to be the evening, more difficult if you've got school-age children, and because of the caring responsibilities, that's difficult.
10 councils across this country have 30% or more women councillors. As Orla pointed out, Kildare County Council stands at 41%. But there's a significant urban and rural disparity in the representation of women. Many rural councils, they have less than 5 women councillors. Within that toolkit, Orla, how does the Women's Council target that particular area?
Well, I think what the toolkit is trying to do is to bring forward a range of different measures that local authorities can adopt, and also looking as well at the practice in some where there is some good practice. So the range of different measures within the toolkit. So, you know, I've spoken about, for example, you know, meeting times, remote working. It's also about supporting new councillors, because what you have is, you know, many councillors that are there, they've been there already before, they're into the system, they know the system. And that's part of the issue of retention, because often what we find is that when women go forward for election, they may not then stand the next time. So some of that is about the supports that are put in place. For example, you know, when you're a new councillor, in terms of the support of getting to know the system, and often that isn't there. And that's very difficult for newer councillors. So that's looking at things like training and development. It's also looking at things like, and we spoke about the diversity issue, that there needs to be things like gender bias training for those who are working within the council, for other councillors, and also training on equality and diversity and inclusion to build an understanding of gender equality and of the impact of council decisions on women, so that we start to look at the work of the councils in terms of the impact they're having on women within the local area.
Well, Director of the National Women's Council of Ireland, Orla O'Connor, thank you for the time. And if people want more information on that toolkit and its launch, of course, you can head on over to nwci.ie and find out all the details there about their new family-friendly toolkit that hopefully will encourage women to get involved in local government. Thanks, Orla. Before I go, I want to note that Trish has been in touch on 0833 97 97 97 saying, "Hi Ciara, is it true that Dunn Stores and Naas are reducing the bottle returns payment from 10 cent per bottle to 1 cent per bottle from tomorrow? That would be a 90% decrease. This would be a big loss to people who use the vouchers to help pay for their shopping, Trish." And Trish, I actually know people who collect the bottles and cans and stuff and go over and get those 10 cent, I guess, vouchers and use it to buy food to then give to like local charities. So not only is it, you know, people themselves doing it, but they're also doing it for other people. And that would be a massive loss. So Trish, I'm going to get on to Dunn's and find out that information. So thank you for alerting me on that. And somebody else has alerted me on the text line that they're off at 6 o'clock if you want to Chinese later on. If that is for me, I do want a Chinese later on. I'm okay that you're off at 6 o'clock. Want to get in touch? Text line's always open. 0833 97 97 97. That's all I can say. And a big congratulations, of course, to Joan and Tim, who have won those pair of tickets. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Kildare Focus with Ciara Noble.